Over the last few weeks, we've looked at how various countries have been dealing with the pandemic. Most, as you've heard, are using lockdowns and testing and social distancing to flatten the curve. But today, an exception. In Sweden, cafes are open, people are free to socialise, testing is rare. The country's counting on citizens to use their own judgment about how to behave with a stated logic behind its actions. Now, so far, Sweden has had a much higher death toll, 3 to 6 times higher than its Nordic neighbours, Norway and Denmark. Its approach is attracting criticism both inside and outside the country, though overall, there's consensus on it. It's a paradox. Erik Augustin Palm is a writer and TV producer who spent the last decade in the US, and recently he returned to his native Sweden and was shocked by what he found to be a laissez-faire approach to the pandemic. And Lena Einhorn is a virologist and author who's been outspoken on this issue. She was one of 2,000 Swedish academics who signed a petition pushing for a change in strategy. Erik and Lena, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, Erik, in this article, returning to actually be with your mother in Sweden, you described landing in an alternative universe, really. What sorts of differences did you find?
Well, I mean, it wasn't like I didn't know what was going to be the case. And by the way, I'm still in self-imposed quarantine before visiting my mother, who lives fairly close to me. I wanted to wait a month to see if I got sick after traveling. Yes, to make sure. Yeah, some estimations say 4 to 5 weeks.
We tend to say 2 weeks here.
Yeah, but I want to make sure. But yeah, at Stockholm Arlanda Airport, our biggest airport, there were no screening taking place, no information pamphlets about recommendations on how to behave after a trip during a pandemic. Just like any other day at the airport, besides it being, you know, fairly empty.
And in fact, you say that life is almost, quotes, normal in Stockholm, which is the epicenter of the country's outbreak. Some Swedes have objected to that, haven't they? They say their lives have been disrupted, that they're working from home and they're maintaining a safe distance from each other. Businesses have closed. Mm-hmm. There are contrasting reports here.
Well, there are statistics, for example, from Google, anonymized mobility statistics, showing that Swedes, you know, they have changed their behavior some, but far less than most of Europe. So relatively within Sweden, there has been some change, but not enough. And you know, now after being here for a couple of weeks, and I am walking and jogging in the downtown Stockholm island, Kungsholmen, where I live, and my initial impression from my taxi ride home, it remains the same. You know, when it's sunny, when it's a nice spring day, Swedes are out and they're
in groups, by the way.
Sure. Yes.
Right. Yeah, so they'll be sitting around having a drink together, whatever.
Well, you know, playing games in the park or sitting on the same blanket, picnicking, you cannot see any kind of real difference in the way people think about social distancing, for example. It's remarkably normal.
Okay. Now, can I bring in Elena here? You're a virologist and an author, and you are one of these group who has been openly critical of the Swedish model. What are your concerns?
My concerns? Well, there are many concerns. I mean, my main concern is that people are dying and they shouldn't have to.
In effect, even though it's not being said as such, this is really the herd immunity approach, isn't it?
Well, they have denied it. They said that it's not the approach that they are, in the past they said that they are trying to slow down as much as they can the epidemic. But now, and I've heard this said and I'm inclined to believe it, as they are faced with an impossible situation, suddenly the herd immunity approach sounds sort of appealing to them. And so now we keep hearing about what high numbers are already seropositive in the Stockholm region. They said that by May 1st, it would have been 26%, and we're nowhere near 26%. So it's a philosophy born out of necessity, I would say, the herd immunity approach.
This is what's so intriguing about it. What was driving the public health agencies and the government's approach then, if it wasn't observably some effort at herd immunity?
Do you want my opinion? And my opinion is that, okay, look at it from different levels. One of the basic situations in Sweden is that we have a system whereby the government makes the formal decisions, but in situations like these, they completely abide by the so-called expert agencies, expert authorities. They will not go against their recommendations unless there's, you know, they can fire them, of course, but otherwise they don't go against their recommendations. And usually this is a good thing because it means that politics doesn't get in the way of facts. The only problem is in a situation like this, if the expert authority or the leading people in the expert agency are not doing the right thing, then nobody stops them.
Well, has there been a debate in Sweden about this? Yes, Eric?
I wouldn't really describe it as a debate in good faith. There is definitely a debate, but it's very colored by holding the line with our public health agency aggressively. And then there has been a few journalists and editors-in-chief that have written editorials in the opposite direction. But generally, our public health agency's direction has been aggressively defended. And both journalists and scientists, which is completely insane, have been bullied if they have critiqued this. So, yeah, there's a debate, but it doesn't look like the debate should look like.
It's, well, I mean, the polls allegedly show the vast majority of Swedes do approve of this, despite the rising death rate.
Let me interject here, because what's really interesting is that there was criticism and heavy criticism in the beginning. There was a point where sort of the epidemic really started in Sweden, and it was when there was a so-called sports vacation last week of February, and people were traveling to the Alps. And there were concerns, should we really be traveling? The state epidemiologist, this famous Anders Tegnell, he said, of course you should be. You know, no problem. This is in China. It's not in the Alps. And then when
this is
what,
February? This is in February, is it?
This is, yeah. So this is exactly, during this week is exactly when the outbreak in Italy happened or became known, rather. So at the end of this week, when people are coming back from the Alps, there are huge concerns in the papers and in media. Are we really going to have the people who traveled to northern Italy put their kids in school now? Should we go back to work? And the health agency, the public health agency said, yes, they have to go to school unless they are sick. There is a law that they have to go to school. If they stay home, then they are breaking the law. And there were a lot of reactions at that point. But then the reactions quieted down. And I don't think it's been, you know, discussed, is this typically Swedish, they abide by the rules, etc. I don't think so. I think the abiding by the rules is universal right now. It's just that the rules in Sweden are crazy, and in most of the world, they're not.
Have you come under attack yourself for being part of this group of people, you know, really had a go at you?
Absolutely, yes. I was one of 22 signatories of article that really broke the wall a bit. And for a few hours, it looked as if, you know, they were on the defense, the public health agency. But then the pushback started, and it started with Anders Tegnell the next morning or the next...
Now, he's the state epidemiologist, isn't he?
He's the state epidemiologist, saying that our figures were wrong and we didn't know what we were talking about. And our figures were not wrong. It was just that he used dead that day figures and we used reported death that day. But he made it sound as if we didn't know what we were talking about.
And then
everybody was focusing on our faulty figures and trying to, you know, make us seem incompetent.
What I don't understand is that when you have your daily figures, I mean, I presume that you've got something like we have where, you know, there are people assembling the figures from around the world and, you know, Sweden's figures don't look good at all. Isn't there some concern expressed about...
I mean, I don't really agree with Lena when it comes to that everyone follows the rules. I was in California for the first 2 months of the pandemic's rising. And in L.A., in Los Angeles, especially where I was, the general public did not at all agree with the response on a federal level. Everyone I met or discussed with, neighbors or friends, thought that the response from the Trump administration was insane. And they partially follow California's own rules, but mainly
done very well. California's done very well.
Yes, yes. I mean, Gavin Newsom, the governor, has been very aggressive in a good way in taking measures. But I do think, in Sweden's case, I definitely think that the Swedish tradition of almost an unbounded naive trust in our experts plays a large role in this, as well as our conformist culture in general.
I want to say something here. You know, I've been asked often, how come everybody's following this guy Tegnell? And I think there are two aspects. One is that when there is a crisis, you need someone to follow. And for heaven's sake, the prime minister is just mum. He says nothing. So instead, it's this Tegnell. The second reason people abide by this Anders Tegnell character is his demeanor and how he presents his case. Because he stands up every day at 2 o'clock and says, oh, the curve is looking good. It's flattening out. He's been saying this since February. It's been flattening out. Oh, it's really looking good. And the reason it's disingenuous is because he presents every day the dead of the day, of the last 24 hours. And the dead of the day is never reported to a large extent that day. It fills up, you know.
There's a lag.
It takes about
there's a lag continuously.
Yeah. Okay, so, okay. Now, but what I'm really taking out of this, I mean, it's just fascinating listening to you both, is that you would think that at some point there would be a question about whether this man is appropriate or whether there needs to be a subtle change of course. And by the sound of you both, there's just no sign really of that happening. It's just too difficult to achieve, would you say?
Now we're reaching numbers that are so high. Swedes in general have gone along with these measures. So I think people are realizing that they've been in on something that has been extremely
disadvantageous.
Yes, yes. So people are now trying to deal with their own guilt, I think, to a large degree.
That's interesting. And Lena, I mean, I take it that what you would have said was that the need to slow it all down so that you can be ready, Sweden can be ready for when antivirals emerge or, you know, with great luck, vaccine. I mean, that's what generally is the debate around the world, isn't it?
They call it the hammer and the dance, the way most countries are treating this. You close it down and then you try to open it up and see what happens and you test. Sweden doesn't even test. Listen, I think the reason we are where we're at right now is that one person or maybe a couple of people 4 months ago decided this is not going to be a big epidemic and we don't have to prepare. And they cannot back down now. And the reason the government is sitting still is because they are afraid. They could act, and they are not.
But there's also the matter of individual responsibility. That's what I am reevaluating in many Swedes, because when you think about it, when you look at all the other countries, essentially in Europe, it's not actually that much. It's not that demanding to put on a mask when you go outside. There's numerous studies showing this is a very efficient way to have some kind of facial protection. It's not that difficult to stay in as much as you can. It's not that difficult to avoid public gatherings. It's not that much that is asked of us. And that Swedes in general don't do this, I have a very hard time exonerating or forgiving people for this.
Thank you both very much for giving us a bit of an insight into what's happening in Sweden. It's not our usual vision of Sweden, I have to say. So Erik Augustin Palm and Lena Einhorn, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to read Eric's excellent article on Sweden's strategy, it's published by Slate Magazine.